The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Do we really understand Ireland's place in the European Union, or even how the EU really works? Well, joining me now is former ambassador to the European Union, the UK and Italy, Bobby McDonagh. Hello, Bobby. You're very welcome.
Good morning, Claire.
You've written this guide, The European Union in 12 Objects, and what you're trying to do is demystify the European Union. Why 12 objects, firstly?
Well, I'm inspired by the British Museum publication some years ago, History of the World in 100 Objects, which became a joint project with the BBC. So I thought I would do something that was fresh and original and engaging, which is to describe the European Union in 12 objects. Why 12? Well, of course, you have to constrain yourself. Discipline and structure is a good thing. But I chose 12 because there are 12 stars on the European flag. And once I'd chosen that, then I worked out which 12 objects I would choose. So they're household objects, as you've seen, like a mirror, a weighing scales, a table, and so on. Mm-hmm. Because the European Union is immensely interesting. And it's not at all boring. Before I launched it at the International Dublin Book Festival last week, I was in the green room, and there was another author there, and I gave her a copy of the book, and she said, oh, I'm really delighted to get that because I really want to know more about Europe. It's so boring. But it's not boring at all. It's immensely exciting, both in the way it operates and in what it can achieve for Ireland.
But do you feel that, you know, perhaps people feel that it is boring? Or did you come from this more of a place that you feel the notion of the European Union perhaps is under threat, or the value that people see it brings to their lives is something that they're questioning at times?
Well, people are to an extent bored by it everywhere. Perhaps not so much in this country, because our media cover it better than other countries, and because we've had several referenda. But there's a sort of vicious circle. People are bored because they don't understand it. They don't understand it because it's not explained, and it's not explained because they're bored. I think the reasons that it's not fully understood anywhere are threefold, very briefly. First of all, because people associate with the local issue, as you know very well, rather than an issue that's that far away. Secondly, because it's immensely complex. The European Union is more complex, shall we say, than Ireland, to understand how it works. And yet the amount of media coverage of it is probably only 10% of what we give to Ireland. And thirdly, of course, there's so much disinformation and cyber warfare and lies about it. So all those things make it very difficult to understand. But I hope that this book will make a contribution that's both accurate but also entertaining.
People get frustrated, don't they? And recent examples include the conflict in the Middle East when America went in to Iran. It took a while for the EU to react and respond to that and to tell us what they thought about it. And then going back to the conflict in Gaza, it was a similar situation where we had Spain going out on a limb and Ireland going out on a limb to a certain extent without it felt the backing of the EU.
You're right, Claire. I mean, one of the chapters in this book, one of my objects, is a Persian rug. And it's a Persian rug because Persian rugs often have a deliberate flaw, because only Allah can make something that is perfect. And one of the first things I say when I'm talking about Europe is that Europe is imperfect. But everything is imperfect. News Talk is imperfect. RTE is imperfect. Every family is imperfect. So unfortunately, the European Union, more than other organisations, because people don't like one aspect of it, even if they support 80-85% of it, they challenge the whole thing. So particularly on the Middle East and Gaza, I'm profoundly concerned about what is happening. I've written about it quite a lot. I've appeared in Al Jazeera. I care about it a lot. But the European Union has complex decision-making procedures, which is one of the things I'm trying to explain in this book. So to do things, you need either unanimity of all the member states or a qualified majority of most of the member states. And that's very difficult to achieve. And the only way to change that would be to remove the unanimity requirement for most foreign policy decisions. Now, I'd be happy to do that. But if there was a proposal to remove the unanimity requirement, which allows us to block things we don't like,
yes,
I can guarantee you that many of the people who are complaining about Gaza would be the very first to object to a decision-making procedure being changed in the European Union to allow it to act more effectively.
Well, you've taken me into why you've used the mirror here, because the mirror reflects who we are and who the European Union is, and our identity is retained as Ireland, but we also see that reflection of us ourselves in the European Union. So it is complex in that regard.
Absolutely.
We retain our autonomy, in other words.
No, absolutely. I mean, national characteristics are not diminished in the European Union. Sometimes people might think that it's amorphous and everybody becomes a vague European. But I can tell you, having sat around the table for decades, that there's probably no forum in which national characteristics come out more clearly. You know, the assertiveness of the Spaniards, the philosophizing of the Italians, the certainty of the British and so on, and of the Dutch. identity is complex. And we know that in so many ways. For example, in this country, people fly Irish flags outside buildings in a sort of assertive and insular way, as we know. And yet Irish identity is much more complex. Or I could give so many examples. Boris Johnson, coming up to the referendum on Brexit, frightened people about the risk of completely imaginary risk of numbers of Turkish people coming to the UK. His grandfather was Ali Kemal, a Turkish journalist. So the politics of identity is very simple, but the reality is very complex. And the European Union understands that. And it was established because of the complexity of identity, not because the member states of the European Union were in any way perfect, not at all, but because of the tragedies of the last century in Europe, they understood better than anyone that identity is complex. And so the European Union was set up not because Europeans are perfect, but precisely because they're imperfect. And they need procedures that allow them to work cooperatively together more than they have ever done in history and more than any other group of countries in the world does today.
Mm-hmm. People worry about that, though, don't they? Further cooperation. And, you know, you've touched on this in our conversation around unanimity. Because of the increasing threat from Russia, the changing relationship with the United States, do you see the raison d'etre, if you like, of the European Union changing?
Not at all. I see it absolutely increasing. I mean, Mark Carney, the Prime Minister of Canada, said recently that we don't have to submit to a more transactional, insular and brutal world. And he said that the international order will be rebuilt out of Europe. A Canadian said that. Sometimes people outside Europe have a better understanding of a potential than we have ourselves. So the raison d'etre of Europe is much greater than it even was before. It is under existential threat in many ways, including from Russian aggression on the continent of Europe. So it's all the more vital that we work together with all our imperfections, both in the interests of the citizens of each country, in the interests of Europe, citizens of Europe as a whole, and of the wider world. Mm-hmm. Because as Mark Carney said, if the international order is to be rebuilt, it won't come from the United States, it won't come from Russia, it won't come from China. There are some countries, of course, that have good values like we do, like Norway and Australia and so on. But the only part of the world that has both the values and the heft to provide leadership with all its imperfections is the European Union.
You say it's under threat, but we've had the political change in Hungary now. Hungary had long been under Viktor Orban, the fly in the European ointment. We see the regret taking hold in Britain, following on from Brexit, with the Labour Party now grappling with this question of whether we should rejoin under Andy Burnham or under Keir Starmer, even it becoming a question for him. Wes Streeting has put it front and centre of his campaign whenever it gets going. Do those issues not strengthen the EU?
I think they do. I think there are good things that happen and bad things that happen. And I think if Britain is moving closer to Europe, that's a very good thing for Europe, for Britain and for Ireland.
Would you want to see them back in?
I would love to see them back in. And I believe that the European reaction to an eventual British request to rejoin would be more positive than is being said in the British media. And I think this is important because if people think that Europe would force Britain to join the euro, for example, it may prevent the debate getting off the ground. But I think
they'd have to be charged a high price, though, after putting us through 10 years of pain to get them out.
I don't think that they would be given a special deal, but I don't think they would be given a significantly worse deal than they had already because of the geopolitical situation. It's so immensely important for all the countries of Europe that we work together because, as I say, there are good things happening and bad things happening. And one of the bad things is that the Putin aggression in Ukraine is not only a threat to Ukraine, it's a threat immediately to Poland and the Baltics and ultimately to us as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the big problem if Britain applied to rejoin, in my view, is that there would have to be some system that would prevent them from pulling the Brexit stunt again. It would have to be marriage for life. And a British journalist said to me that it was more like Taylor and Burton without the diamonds. So some sort of major prenup would be required mm-hmm. if Britain was to rejoin. But I'd be very much in favour of it.
Nigel Farage could be the next Prime Minister, so the question may not arise.
Well, that's true. But, you know, optimism is a policy in life. And we certainly can't sit back and wait for these potentially bad things to happen. And as you say, the people of Hungary have shown recently that it's possible to overturn a populist and increasingly totalitarian government, even one that tried to control all of the media. So, you know, we have to keep working at things here. The British have to keep working at it, the French, the Germans, because there is that threat of populism within Europe, as well as the threats coming from outside.
Coming back to the book, The European Union in 12 Objects, who is it for, Bobby?
Well, a good question. It's really for anybody who wants to understand the European Union better. But I would particularly like if teachers and schools got copies. It's available both in digital form and hard copy. It's free. I'm not trying to line my own pocket, from the European Commission Office for transition year students and above. I think the hard copy, as you've seen, is beautifully produced and designed, not by me, but by the Institute for International and European Affairs. So it's free. And it's already being circulated widely. But anybody who wants to know more about Europe, or wants their children to understand more about Europe, or organisations or schools, they should contact the Commission, get digital copies, and also try to get some hard copies. Because I think when you hold it in your hand and you see those images, it's more meaningful.
Bobby, thank you for coming in and telling us about it. That is Bobby McDonagh.
The Clare Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.